Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. It is terrific to have our next guest join us, a fascinating man. On July 17th, 1944, a massive explosion rocked the segregated Navy base at Port Chicago, California, killing more than 300 sailors who were at the docks, critically injuring off-duty men in their bunks and shattering windows up to a mile away. On August 9th, 244 men refused to go back to work until unsafe and unfair conditions of the docks were addressed. When the dust settled, 50 were charged with mutiny, facing decades in jail and even execution. Stephen Scheinkin's new book on the subject is The Port Chicago 50. Scheinkin is the award-winning author of several bombs on American history for young adults. Bomb, The Race to Build and Steal the World's Most Dangerous Weapon, was awarded a Newbery Honor, won the Cyber Medal, and was a finalist for the National Book Award. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Steve Scheinkin to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be on.
Really nice to have you here. This story is something that I have sort of heard about only in passing. I don't know or did not know until reading the book a tremendous amount about it. How did it come onto your radar?
It's a very little known story, and it came onto my radar while researching the previous book, Bomb, about the making of the atomic bomb and the espionage that went on during the Manhattan Project. And there's a very little known wacky conspiracy theory, so I hope you like wacky conspiracy theories about...
You've listened to the show. Of course we love wacky conspiracy theories.
Good, good. Yes. So when was the first atomic bomb tested? That's the question.
Yeah.
And of course, we all think it was tested in New Mexico in 1945, but that's what they want us to think. Really, this conspiracy goes that there was a test in 1944 at a place called Port Chicago. And it was that conspiracy theory that I came across, which sounded absurd. I'd never heard of Port Chicago. I started doing research and found out that, sure enough, there was this huge disaster and explosion at this naval base called Port Chicago in California in 1944. Now it turns out there's no credible evidence for this idea that it was a secret nuclear test, but it led me into the exploration, the kind of detective work that goes along with, well, what really did happen?
Right.
And it was a disaster story, but it was also, even more importantly, a really early civil rights story.
So the subtitle of the book is Disaster, Mutiny, and Fight for Civil Rights. And I really, I was fascinated most by that mutiny and fight for civil rights part of the story. But let us talk about the disaster.
Okay.
So if there is no credible evidence for the conspiracy side of this, what did you end up thinking, okay, this is probably what happened?
Well, it was a completely segregated naval base, as the entire Navy was segregated. At the start of World War II, the Navy made what they considered a concession. They said, all right, we'll allow blacks to serve as sailors, but not on ships. So that meant all white crews on ships, all black crews on land. And at Port Chicago, the sailors were handling and loading ships with ammunition. That was their job. They were never trained to do it. And they knew that the conditions were very, very dangerous. They were being rushed. It turned out the officers were betting one another whose division could load the fastest. And they all knew something terrible was going to happen. They talked about it. And sure enough, in July of 1944, there was a ship at the port full of over 5,000 tons of ammunition, so almost the size of one of those early nuclear bombs. And it blew up. And to this day, we don't know exactly what happened, but it doesn't take a lot of imagination to figure out that something went wrong. Some small explosion on the dock set off this ship full of bombs.
All the men who were loading the bombs were black.
Right.
Okay. So then this horrible thing happens, and all of the men that survived, you take to another place to do the exact same thing again,
in the exact same way. And those are the characters that I follow in my story. I follow them before this disaster, and I follow them through the disaster. They're in their barracks about a mile away at
right.
the time of the explosion. It's 10 o'clock at night, but the loading's going on 24 hours a day. Many of them are injured, cuts. One of them was blinded, a lot of broken bones. They were taken to another base on the Bay Area, and certainly suffering from what we would call post-traumatic stress disorder now, but that wasn't recognized at the time. Seen a lot of their friends die. They were one of the jobs they were given in the days after the blast was to pick up the bodies, but there were only pieces of bodies.
Mm.
And they were told right away to go to a new base and get ready to go back to work. And they suspected, though they weren't told, that they would be doing the same exact thing in the same exact way and face this really loaded moral dilemma. What do you do? We're in the military. We don't get to choose our jobs. But on the other hand, here we are serving in this military. A president's telling us that we're fighting to save democracy and freedom around the world, but we can't get served in a bar. And this is California.
Right.
And they recognize the great hypocrisy in that.
So on August 9th, 244 of these men stood up and said, no.
Yeah, there was a pivotal kind of Rosa Parks moment, though very little known. The first group was being marched down to the pier, and they knew if they got this order, column left, literally moving left, would be to the loading pier. And they got it, and they stopped in the road. And throughout the day, other divisions stopped in the road as well. And an admiral collected them all on a baseball field at the base and got right to the point. He said, you guys are all guilty of mutiny. And if you don't go back to work right now, I'm going to see that you're all shot.
Hmm.
And hearing that, many of them, it's important to keep in mind, especially when I'm writing for young readers, that a lot of these guys weren't much older than high school students would be. Some of them were 17, 18 years old. And they're faced with this decision. We have 30 seconds to decide, do we face a firing squad or we go back to work? I think, understandably, most of them went back to work. But 50 refused, and that's where the name of the book and a nickname that these guys have sort of been given over the years, the Port Chicago 50, comes from.
When it comes to the saying no, all of those men were black.
Yes.
And did... One of the things I found curious was what was the media coverage of this at the time?
Very little. The disaster, as you can imagine, was a front page story nationally. But after that, very little. And this was the summer of 1944, D-Day and the invasion of Europe is going on. The war in Japan, against Japan is raging. So there was a lot happening, but this was simply not a mainstream press story. You have to look to the black press and actually to communist newspapers that covered civil rights in a way that mainstream press didn't.
And how would they cover it? What were they saying?
Well, they told the story very much from the point of view of the sailors, from the point of view of, here are these guys in this very unfair position. They're being discriminated against in a military that's fighting for freedom. And that was the angle that they took on the story.
At the risk of going off the subject here for a moment, yeah. I just want to ask you, do you think... Because I was reading the story and I was struck by that, and I thought to myself, I wonder if, you know, do we feel that if this happened today, with some changes to more reflect our current equalities and inequalities, could this happen today? And if it did, would it be covered in such a manner? Or would it be the you know, 24-hour coverage around CNN? And I guess it's a loaded question because I find that hard to believe that it would be.
Yeah, I don't know how. I mean, it's easy to imagine how it would be covered anyway.
Absolutely.
Because it's a story that you could take very different sides to, and I could see the right-wing press would say, hey, these guys are disobeying orders.
Yeah.
And the other side would be, yeah, but they're being discriminated against and that needs to change. And I love a story like that, that here's, it's not just a question of what happened. It's what do you think about this? And very much relevant to today.
When it comes to what happened to these men and being when they became known as the Port Chicago 50, what ultimately was their fate?
Well, they were all put on trial for mutiny, and that is a big part of the story, the courtroom right. drama that ensues. Thurgood Marshall got involved. He was a very young civil rights lawyer at the time. But they were all convicted of mutiny. They were not executed, but were given long prison sentences. And because of the pressure put on the Navy by Marshall and Eleanor Roosevelt, who got involved and was interested in the story, and civil rights groups, the Navy sort of quietly made it all go away by letting these guys out of prison after the war ended and putting them back on ships This is how you know the Navy didn't really consider them mutineers. Not only did they let them out of prison, but they said, all right, now we're going to let you serve out the rest of your time in the military. And they put these guys back on ships on active duty. And they served out their time, but they lived the rest of their lives as convicted mutineers.
And you would think, once you say when you should get out, and after they've done this to you, you know, if you had some freedom, you would say, okay, well, I'm not going to go work for you anymore.
Yeah, but these guys were, for the most part, very patriotic. They really wanted to serve. The sailors whose stories I studied and read were happy to be able to go back and prove that they could do this job that they were told they couldn't do.
You alluded to this a moment ago and talked about it, about in writing for children. What challenges does that face, especially when you're dealing with subjects like this and dealing with the bomb? And these are big subjects, but obviously ones that young readers should be aware of. So what is your philosophy when it comes to telling those stories to that particular audience?
The big thing is never write down to the audience. Never think that they're not going to understand something that adults can understand.
Right.
Tell a very complex story, but also make it exciting. Make it fun to read. You know, my confession personally is that for years I wrote history textbooks. I feel terrible about that, but I've been trying to make amends for it for years. And so I do the opposite now of what textbooks do. I tell stories. And stories that, like this one, engage you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a question of what to remember, to regurgitate on a test, but what would you do in this situation? And if you have a story that's really compelling, that puts the reader into it and presents them with a moral dilemma, it doesn't matter how complicated it is.
But we're just about out of time, but I have to ask you this question, which is, why can't we write textbooks like that? Why can't we tell stories in that way?
Ah, that's another segment.
There are
a lot of political reasons why we don't write textbooks that way, but we should. And I think people are moving away from the names and dates kind of history to the more engaging what would you do history, which just works much better.
You do tell a very exciting story, and I also have to say that the use of photography is really incredible, because you can see these people and you feel you feel the anguish and the pain and what they're going through.
Absolutely, and it's all the stories and the photographs too come from the families and the people who were there, so it's all very much based on primary sources.
Steve Sheinkin's new book is The Port Chicago 50. It is published by Roaring Brook Press. Steve, it's a great pleasure. I thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Best of luck with the book.
Thank you very much.
To have you here. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.